Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio on Monday, May 18th, 2020. And thanks so much for being with us today. And I think today, I'm not sure, but I think it's the 40th anniversary of Mount St. Helens, the volcano, blowing its top, killing a lot of people out in Washington State. And it's interesting, they compared in the New York Times today the science and people fighting the science and wishing to go back in and not wishing to evacuate and all that, okay, to the pandemic today. And the trials that we went through back then are similar to the ones, although obviously this one has a much broader scale, okay, the pandemic today. But it was an interesting article. So I flew over Mount St. Helens about a month after it happened, and it was one of the most amazing sights I've ever seen from an airplane. It was just the whole mountain blew away, and hopefully we won't be blown away with this pandemic, and we'll be in good shape. We have an amazing show for you today here on Education Talk Radio. We have Jessica Rosenworcel, who is the terrific, and I'll introduce all of you in just a second, for real, FCC commissioner. Okay, she's just amazing. And also we have a second amazing person, okay, Larry Irving, who's the CEO of the Irving Group. He was an assistant secretary of commerce for communications and information and administrator of the National Telecommunications and Information Administration during Bill Clinton's presidency. And he is the first African-American elected to the Internet Hall of Fame. And I'm really honored to have both of them here. Just let me get 2 seconds worth of homework done, and we'll go from there. We archive every show over at education-talkradio.org. That's our website. Every show we've ever done is listed over there or at past shows, education-talkradio.org. We got a new schedule up there for a terrific week, the show beginning the week, quite obviously. We also have our other website, which we are very proud of, and that is ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, and that site is dedicated to equity and access for pre-K-12 education. ACE-ED.org, that's actually an acronym, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. ACE-ED.org, and our magazine AC&E is over there, and all kinds of wonderful up-to-date information on what's available during this COVID crisis, etc. It's just a great website. We usually go over and join our consortium, speak with us. In 2 days, we're having a big Twitter chat on rural education. That'll fit in with a little bit of what we're doing today as well. So please, ace-ed.org, join our consortium. It's free. You get a magazine subscription. It's free. And we're trying to get your voice heard. Okay. What if ace-ed.org? That's what you need to know. Let me bring on Jessica and Larry, which, by the way, is one of the finest first names. Hello, Larry. It's Larry Jacobs here.
Good morning, Larry. It's a delight to be with you, and it's even more delight to be with my friend Jessica. So it's a great way to start my week.
Yeah, it's a great way for me to start my week.
Good morning, Jessica. I can call you Jessica, not Commissioner. Is
yes,
that okay,
please
Jessica?
Do. Absolutely.
I will. This woman, I just have to say this, and Larry, you're pretty amazing, and your first name just speaks magnificence, if I may say so. Okay, it's just an objective point of view here. But I just got to read this one thing. Jessica Rosenworcel was named as one of Politico's 50 – don't start blushing, Jessica, but we can't see you. You can blush if you want. Named as one of Politico's 50 Politicos to watch and profiled – I love this part – by InStyle magazine in a series celebrating, ready, women who show up, speak up, and get things done. And that is Commissioner Rosenworcel of the FCC. It's a pleasure to have you here, Jessica.
Thank you. It's a treat to be here this morning.
And how long have you been on been a commissioner?
Well, I've had 2 terms, and but they were not there was a little time between them. So so this latest one, I am, let's see, coming on 3+ years. But I was on for close to 4 years before that.
Cool. Cool. And I know the wonderful job you do. We have a good friend, a mutual friend named John Harrington, who just adores you, okay, over at Funds for Learning. All right? He just thinks
sure,
the world
sure.
of you. And Larry, I'll ask you the same similar question. How long have you been Larry?
I've been Larry for, I'm almost ready for Social Security, believe it or not, 64 years and 2 months, and 10 months. So 2 months from now, I'm on Medicare.
Well, congratulations on all of that, Larry. And really,
yeah,
you are.
I'm graduating
you are,
into senior citizenship.
That's hysterical. Welcome to my world, by the way. I must tell you. Welcome to my world. Okay? It's not
Thank
so bad.
You.
Jessica has a long way to go before she gets there. Okay.
I feel like I should congratulate you guys for that. I'm not sure yet, but give me the notes for some years from now. Okay.
So these are the days you wish you were Benjamin Button when you were getting younger every day, not older. It's that simple. Okay. And you two are just amazing people. I thank you. We're going to be talking about, this is interesting. We call it the digital divide. All right. And we used to call it the homework gap. Because so many kids went home with homework they had to do, needed broadband access, and they didn't have access. That has changed. It's now called the education gap because everybody's at home and teachers have to teach online. And I say it this way, and you're welcome to steal this quote, okay? We kicked the can down the road for too long, and at the end of the road we found out it's a cliff, and here we are. All right, and it's that simple. And I want to start with Jessica. Jessica, I know you are so involved in this. You try to expand broadband access. It's one of the things you're a champion of. And just talk about this from the FCC. What does the FCC have to do with this? Let's put it that way.
Sure.
I think
okay,
that
so
needs
let's
to be
roll back.
And
right?
By the way, we're talking to educators.
Sure.
You can put that in that format. Go ahead.
All right. So the Federal Communications Commission got started in 1934, and it's a long time ago. And over time, it has come to oversee everything from broadcasting to broadband. In other words, all the communications, modern life function. And those communications have become incredibly important for education. And the first evidence we have of that is the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which set up the E-rate program. E-rate's the nation's largest education technology program, and it helps support internet connections in schools and libraries all across the country. And one thing that started to become clear to me when I visited schools that rely on E-rate funds is that it didn't matter if it was a big city school or in a small town,
mm-hmm.
if it was urban mm-hmm. America or rural America, I heard the same thing from teachers and superintendents and school administrators. They kept on saying to me, they were starting to see the digital divide because they had connectivity in the classroom. But those
mm-hmm.
kids went home, and they didn't have internet access, and they couldn't do their homework. They couldn't follow up on school. And, you know, when I was in school, it took paper, pencil, and my brother leaving me alone to get homework done. But those days are over. Kids need internet access, right? And I heard it from every E-rate school I visited. And I felt like that lack of internet access at home, we needed to give it a term. Because I knew from my visits that 7 in 10 teachers assign homework that requires internet access, but FCC data show 1 in 3 households don't have it. And those numbers where they
yeah.
overlap is what I started calling the homework gap. And it's really an important part of our nation's digital divide. It deserves attention. And now in this crisis, it is front and center like never before.
Exactly. We're off the cliff. And again, I will only disagree in saying now it's an education gap. We've been screaming about this. I've been doing this show for almost 10 years now. And we've been screaming about this for a long time. And we started our magazine and our website, Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity. I'll say it again, ace-ed.org, because we really felt the time had come. Little did anyone know that this thing was coming down the pike. And one important question, because Larry and I will take care of him, is your brother still bothering you when you're doing your homework?
Oh, no, those are not the concerns I have these days. But it's just, it is different. And, you know, it's been a task teaching Washington that the digital divide is real and that internet access is essential for education.
Oh, yeah. It's if I may, and I don't know if the FCC was this, but the TVA in the 1930s brought electricity, obviously everybody knows this, to people all over rural America. So therefore, they had access to information. Well, now it's not radio, it's the internet. Was the FCC an outgrowth of that? Or
no, but it's a
that?
Really good historical analog. which is that we, you know, a century ago, we had this electricity divide. The cities were lit up, but
yeah.
the countryside had very little access. You couldn't turn on the lights. And so, you know, we did something audacious. We came up with the Rural Electrification Act. We decided everyone should have access to this technology. We need to be in the same place right now. But when we do it, we have to remember it's not just rural America. It's urban America, too, because we've got to figure out how to connect every household and every child.
Yeah, I did a show a couple of weeks ago with the Bronx High School of the Future, a couple of people from there, wonderful people. But this that school with this great name is in the poorest congressional district in the country. And they were able to give the kids Chromebooks, but at home they didn't have access. So, hello? Okay, what was the point of that, giving the kids a paperweight? So we got to be careful about this. And we've known about this for a while. And the man who discovered it is on the show with us, Larry Irving. Okay, Larry, the digital divide. You did the research. And was that when you were Assistant Secretary of Commerce?
Yes, it was. And it's funny. I'm from New York City, and I'm really from Brooklyn and Queens, but I have family in the Bronx, and including from that congressional district. And you know, the origins of the digital divide really do go back to schools. I was working for Bill Clinton, Al Gore, and Secretary of Commerce then was a guy named Ron Brown. And Ron was from Harlem.
Sure.
I'm from Brooklyn.
Sure.
We go out to California, to Cupertino, California. It's 1993. We're sitting around a school in Cupertino. Cupertino is the headquarters of Apple. And these kids are sitting in eight to a desk. I'll never forget this picture. And they all have network Apple computers in front of them, iMacs, those big bubbly-looking iMacs. And the kids were so cute, and they were learning so much. Later that day, Ron and I took the car up, went up to Hunters Point, San Francisco, to a low-income school, Thurgood Marshall High School, mostly black and Latino. And those kids had no idea that a computer existed, much less a thing called the Internet. And that really was the impetus for the whole concept of the digital divide. We knew that we could tell the story anecdotally, but we also knew the data is so much more powerful, that if you have, you know, great public service like Jessica at a place like the FCC and you show them data, normally the right things will get done. And so we started a series of three reports, and we to take a look at where America was with regard to who had and who didn't, and we found that rural didn't. Suburban did. We found that low-income didn't.
Yeah.
And, that more affluent did, that if your parents were educated, you were more likely. And it's an important, you know, thing that people always forget about. And I know this is mostly educational, but one in four Americans over 65 don't have access to the Internet today. And we also found that age was a fact, really set a groundwork for us to start doing some hard work to get everybody connected. And I would say that first report in 1994, the 25th anniversary, 1995, the first anniversary of our first report will be July of this year. 25 years later, we're still fighting the same battles. It makes no sense to me that.
It makes no sense to anybody. Makes no sense to anybody. And you just use the word start. Okay. But we should have started back in 1996. I can't understand this. And that brings a good question, but I have to say something. You brought back a bad memory a minute ago with Ron Brown. I forgot. He was killed in that car, that on an airplane crash years ago. You must
he was
have known
killed
him.
On a, it was a horrible day of my life. I was up on Capitol Hill the day it happened and, visiting some senators. It was a horrible day. It was, what happened, he was on a mission of mercy, and his plane flew in a rainstorm into a mountain. And what was almost worse about it was the first person on the plane that they identified was an executive with AT&T. So it was billed as a telecom trade mission. So friends of mine from all over the world thought I was on the plane, which I'd been invited to be.
Oh, my God.
I was doing other things in Washington. So from relatives to friends I knew, they all thought I might be on that plane. So for my wife and I, that was a horrible day to lose a friend, and an even worse day to have people you love think that you were on that plane. And
absolutely.
I lost a lot of good friends that day. A lot of good friends.
Yeah, boy, I bet you did. I'm sorry you had to go through that, man. The whole country went through that day. That was a terrible, terrible experience. And I forgot, you know, over the course of years, I've forgotten about that. But when you just brought up Ron's name, the secretary, it brought back a memory. And wow, really, really, really something. And, you know, it's funny, you just couldn't go on that plane. Just think how little decisions make such a difference in our lives. Okay? Oh, geez, I can't go on this mission. And you're probably disappointed, and look how it winds up. So let me ask you this. I'll stick with you, Larry. Then I'm going to ask the same question to Jessica. Okay, we're talking about – you mentioned E-rates, okay? We're talking 30 years, basically, okay? And when I talked to my friend John Harrington, and by the way, this is a COSIN show. I forgot to mention at the beginning, my good friends at the Consortium for School and School Networking. Thank you, guys, Heidi, Keith, everybody over there for putting this together. What has taken so long? John and I talk about this. We know that it can be fixed. We know how to fix it, yet we keep putting it off. And look, I'll say it again, look where we are today, okay, with education. That's all I'm talking about with the pandemic. So why, Larry? Why has this taken so long? You figured this out 30 years ago, okay? And then we're going to ask Jessica the same thing. So, Larry?
I'm an optimist, and so I'm going to look at the good news first and then go to what needs to be fixed. The good news is from the very start of the Clinton administration back in 1992-93, we made it a mission to connect every school, hospital, library, and rural health clinic to the Internet by the year 2000. And we updated that to every school, every classroom should have Internet access by the year 2000. We came pretty close to that by the time the Clinton administration ended. Every school was connected, and virtually every classroom was connected by 2000 or thereafter. So we did get the connections to the schools. There has always been a fight between the public sector and the private sector over whose job it is to connect people outside of the schools. What I'm excited about is people like Keith Krugel, who I work with on Capitol Hill, and the folks at Shelby and COSIN and various organizations are now seeing that we have connections to the schools. Can we use those connections to the schools to get out communities so that the E-rate is not just the schools, but we can use some of that funding elsewhere? The biggest problem has been, and it's very expensive to do rural America, and we haven't figured out a way to take care of urban America. The urban-suburban issue isn't one of access. We have broadband going past the homes of about 95-97% of urban Americans. They can't afford it, and we haven't figured out a pricing mechanism to help low-income people, in particular working-class people, get access. That's just been a political fight over philosophy, and we should not deprive our kids access to education and access to educational tools because of political philosophies.
You got that right, because if we keep doing it that way, all those people, all those kids who are born into lower income are not given the same opportunity, hence they tend to remain in lower income. And by the way, yesterday's New York Times, I bet both of you have seen this, but for the audience's sake, there's a big section about cities during this pandemic, and they have these little sections from educators all through it, and the whole thing is just about equity. That's in today's May 18th or May 17th, Sunday, New York Times. Jessica, you're the government side of this, okay? Yeah. Larry used to be. He's off the hook, okay? What's he's private now. Okay, so why is this taking so long? Why are we still fighting this? And let me throw another question. You can add it on. All of a sudden, you know, once they found out the Titanic wasn't unsinkable, they built boats better. Are we going to do a better job now? So there's two questions.
Yeah, well, first of all, I hope so. I'll just add that at the end. But it's not going to happen without a fight. It's not going to happen without some pressure. And, you know, all of this is built on that data collection that Larry was describing that was done a quarter of a century ago, this idea that access is essential if you want to have the opportunity to thrive in the digital age. And we want every student, every community to have that opportunity. And this crisis is shining a light on this issue like never before. So let me be an optimist for a moment and say we're going to take that and we're going to make some changes. Now, I've been making a ruckus and making a lot of noise about the homework gap for a long time. But now that we've got more than 50 million students at home, they're no longer in the classroom. They're sitting at their kitchen table. The kitchen table is the classroom. We've locked so many of them out of school if they don't have this access. I feel like it has become clearer to policymakers in Washington and around the country. So I have some optimism that we're going to do something. And we are now seeing legislation on the House side and the Senate side trying to address this homework gap in this crisis and just recognizing for the first time nationwide that we can't leave children offline. Now, I think the FCC today has all the authority it needs to solve this problem. I haven't convinced my colleagues, despite my smarts and charm, but I feel like we need to be able to rise to this moment, right? Look at this moment that we're at in history. We should figure out how to use our legal authority to extend E-rate so it reaches every child at home. And when we do, we have to recognize there are two components to this problem. And I think we've been slow to do this. We have to recognize that we've got rural communities that do not have the infrastructure, and that's a challenge. But we also have to recognize that we have urban and suburban communities where kids are not connected because their parents don't see the relevance, because it's not affordable. Sometimes there's redlining. We've got to figure out how to address both deployment and adoption if we really want to solve the digital divide and fix this homework gap. And I'm hoping we can use this crisis to build momentum to do so, because we could change education and make it more equitable if we do so and get to the other side.
Without question, let me just say one thing and I'll go to, you know, it's not up to the parents. The parents may not understand this, okay? But they may not understand why we build schools either, okay? But we still build them, okay? So kids can go to school. It's really up, and if I may, more up to the states than the feds. Okay, the states are responsible for education. They have to provide an equitable education for every student. That's the law. Okay, and if they're not doing it, they themselves are irresponsible. That's my speech. Go ahead, Larry.
A couple of things. One, I'm also on the board of Education Networks of America, and I will tell you, a lot of states are stepping up. But communications policy has always been a federal policy, and there is a role for the FCC. Let me give you just a quick example of what's happening in America today.
Yeah.
I live in Washington, D.C., in the middle of the city. I live a block and a half from a wonderful elementary school called Oyster School. Oyster School is a bilingual school, so kids who speak English and Spanish all live there. The kids on my block, the block I live on, one block from the school, have a gig network running down the block, so the kids on this block are using a gig network. Some of the kids on my block are using a thing called Internet Essentials that Xfinity Comcast provides, and that gives them, for $9.95, 25 megs up, three megs down, three megs up, which is still defined as broadband, although no one would actually pay for that if they didn't have to. And then there are another group of kids in that school that have no Internet access at home. Now imagine you're a teacher in a classroom, and some of those kids have a gig network. Some of them are sputtering along at 20, and some go home every night, and they can't do any homework at all. And then take a crisis where all of those kids are out of school. And you're, as a teacher, trying to help all of these kids with such disparate technological connectivity. Jessica was right. When we were – and I was a kid a long time before she was a kid. When we were kids, we would take our textbooks home. We would take our pencils home. We'd take our protractors home. Nobody, you know, look that up, young people, what a protractor is. We take those things home, and we would do our work. Nowadays, if you don't have some type of device, you simply cannot compete. And here's the really sad part from my perspective. We don't have good information. The information that both Jessica and I are talking about is mostly information from organizations like the Pew Research Center or other organizations that do this because they think it's good research. The Federal Communications Commission, Department of Education, my old agency, Department of Commerce, we don't have the data we need to really make the decisions that need to be made to bring people online. So organizations like I'm ENA, or if you're in Tennessee or Texas or New York, and you're trying to figure out what's the world look like, we don't have that good, robust data. And that's the first thing we need to start doing, mapping out who has access and who doesn't, and getting affordability data so that we know exactly what we need to do and how to fix the problem. You can't fix a problem if you don't know what the problem is.
Here, here. And by the way, what I said before, I didn't mean that the Fed, just to make myself clear, I didn't mean that the Feds didn't have a responsibility, FCC. They certainly do. But the states are responsible for education, okay? And education is boiling down right now to Internet access. And that's the state's rule. I'm trying to, you know, make it easier on the FCC. We got to share this responsibility and make it happen. The FCC and the Feds are incredibly important. Go ahead, Jess. That's not what I meant. Yeah.
No, absolutely. But we should acknowledge we're seeing incredible things being done by educators at the local and state level.
Oh,
and,
unbelievable!
You know, they are in the most inspiring and scrappy ways pulling together connectivity for their students that don't have it. I'd like to see the E-Rate program support every school library being
here,
able
here.
To loan out Wi-Fi hotspots to students. It would change the homework app overnight. We should do that. But in the absence of us doing that, they're figuring out how to pull together connectivity for those students, get them those hotspots, or set up school buses in the communities that are least likely to be connected by putting Wi-Fi on those
yep.
school buses. They're putting Wi-Fi in their school parking lots, and it is a sad fact that in the United States of America, parking lot Wi-Fi has become a thing. But look at what they're doing to just try to keep their students and communities connected. We should be inspired by those efforts, but then we should want to do better. We should make sure every student can be connected at home. And, you know, it's not just about the kids and their education. It's about making sure that entire community can thrive in the digital age, making sure kids are getting the access they need for the economy that they'll enter and the jobs of the future. And this all, you know, comes together between education, communities, and economies. And we've got to use this moment to address the homework gap and make a meaningful dent in our nation's digital divide. Because if we can't do it now, when are we going to do
when?
It? This is the moment to
when?
Make it
exactly.
happen.
Exactly. I have other questions, but Larry brought up something interesting. You know, and Larry said for $9.95, they can get internet access. Okay, and I know Spectrum and a whole group of those companies are doing that, which is very nice. But the point is, a lot of people don't have the $9.95, and education needs to be accessible for everybody. We have free public education, so to speak. Of course, we pay our taxes. If they don't have the $9.95, we've got $9.95. We've got to cover that. Okay, the world has just changed.
Queens, and is my old high school, my elementary school PS118 has about 80% of the kids there are on free or reduced lunch. So there, it's a really poor district in Queens.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why PS118 couldn't use couldn't put an antenna on top, use the broadband connectivity into the school, and
yeah,
create a free
exactly.
educational network for kids in that community. And all, you know, it might only be 3 or 4 or 5 miles, but those kinds of initiatives are things we're hearing from schools and school districts and educators around the country. We've got to think different. You know, Andy Cuomo was talking about reimagining. We need to reimagine education. We need to reimagine the digital divide. We need to reimagine the homework gap and come up with
That's
solutions
right.
that take advantage of existing strengths that we have as a nation.
Of which we have plenty. And we have great technological advances. We can do this. I'll say it again. We can do this. We just are not. And just let me go back to you. This is kind of a political question, but I don't necessarily mean it to be. Is this bipartisan? Do we find that everybody understands this in Congress and, you know, where the money comes from in the House of Representatives? Okay.
You know, I believe this should be.
Yeah.
Well, it should be bipartisan because we've got kids who are doing homework in red state America and blue state America. You know, we're united in the desire to make sure our children get an education. This is part of modern education. We've got to come together and solve this because I don't think that this is a partisan issue. This is about every community being able to thrive.
Yeah, but when you work in Washington, and you do, okay, do you feel a partisanship in there over this issue? And I know every congressperson gives lip service to it. They all want education. I believe they do even. But they got to put the dollars out there. What's the word? Bipartisan?
Yeah, you know, I am not willing to yield to the idea that this will be partisan. I know that when I testify in front of Congress and I talk about kids not being able to do their schoolwork and sitting in a library parking lot after it's closed just to catch a free Wi-Fi signal, I look up and I got members from both parties listening to me. And I'm actually hopeful that when we all see this problem in our own backyard, we're going to find a way forward and we're going to do it together. We might not be there yet. But I'm convinced that this problem is nationwide. And that means that we need to develop a nationwide solution.
Listen, I live in a small town in Maine. All right. Just about 35 miles west of Portland. Okay. And in our town, which is a nice town, it's called Cornish, Maine, nice little town, full antique stores, nice restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of kids that hang out near the library at night. After it closes, because they can pick up Wi-Fi out there. It gets cold here in Maine starting in November. Okay?
Yep.
The kids have to hang out
there.
And last
until September.
Yeah.
I said, unless it's September, just, Larry, it's cold up there.
It's cold up there, especially if you're from D.C., it's cold up here. Okay, we had snow a week and a half ago on Saturday, just to give you an idea. Okay, but the kids work outside. Okay, this is crazy. This is America. This is 2020. What are we talking about here? This is something we need to do right now. So let's ask this. Let's leave positive. I'll start with Larry. I'm going to give Jessica the last word. Larry Irving, what do we need to do next? What should educators do? Let me say it that way. What should an educator do?
Educators should make sure that their elected officials and their state public officials know the importance of broadband to their kids. They also need to come up, every solution to these kinds of problems are solved at the local level. Back in the early 90s, I was connecting schools and libraries and hospitals with a grant program at the Department of Commerce. It was the people in local communities who taught us what needed to be done in those schools. It wasn't out of Washington. So we need the vision, we need the energy, we need the insights that are coming in from folks who are at the front line. One of the things that I've been advocating over the last month is, who's taking the lessons learned? Where are students really doing well in terms of connectivity? What that allow them to really bring out the best of these kids during this kind of a pandemic? And what are practices that we shouldn't be using? There's a lot of wisdom out there in the community, and the teachers have that wisdom. They need to get it to their state capitals. They need to get it to Washington so folks like Jessica can fight the fight for them.
And she will. She will. Thank you, Larry.
No,
Jess,
she will.
Your thoughts?
Effectively.
Oh, she will.
I know.
See, you don't
want to
get
on
don't want to get on Jessica's bad
Larry
side.
Said.
Believe me. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just love what Larry said. I want to co-sign all of it because what it comes down to is we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to make it the norm in this country that every child is connected. It's essential for school. It's essential for education. And there is legislation on the House side, the Senate side. These issues are before the FCC. But what matters most is hearing from educators, teachers, administrators, superintendents on the front line, explaining what this crisis means and how connectivity is so important for the future of education. Because I'm convinced that if we have all that noise from all across the country, we're going to be able to not just solve this problem in this crisis, but, make a meaningful difference going forward. That's what we want to see happen.
And
we want to close the homework gap nationwide.
We do. The education. I'm going to call it the education gap. That's where we are right now. Okay? It's more than homework. It's education. This is where it is right now. Okay? And Jess, who should they write? Their congressperson, their senator, the FCC? Who should they write?
All of the above. Make sure everyone
Good.
Knows. One thing that we've been looking at during this crisis is I've had folks in my office just start collecting information about articles that are being written about kids and connectivity and how they do their schoolwork in this crisis. And what's stunning to me is they're in every media outlet, small ones, little ones, big ones, nationwide. This problem is in all of our backyards, whether we live in urban America or rural America. So I just feel like there's an opportunity to unite and solve this now. So let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. I invite both of you and all the listeners, please, and I do this every show, go over to ACE-ED.org. That's our website, and we're dedicating ourselves to this stuff. Okay? And we're the only ones doing it. Okay? ACE-ED.org. And our magazine is out there. You'll really enjoy it. And we're putting together a new issue right now. And we need your support, and we're going to give our support to you. So I can't thank both of you enough, not only for what you've done, but what you're currently doing. It's just incredible. So, Jessica, thanks a million. Jessica Rosenworth.
Thank you.
Thank you. For everything, by the way, not just this show, everything. Okay? And, Larry, same to you, my friend. Same to you, CEO of the Irving Group.
Thank you, Larry.
Oh, my
Keep
pleasure.
Representing
and,
your name well.
It's a great name, isn't it? It's a great name. What can
it really
I say?
Is.
Jessica and that other Larry, thank you both so very much. Have a great day. Stay safe, please.
All right, you too.
Okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right. The great named, the well-named Larry Irving and the beautifully named Jessica Rosenworcel. Jessica's an FCC commissioner, and she's amazing. All right, and just check that out. I won't get into all the details. Okay, she's a mover and shaker. And Larry Irving, first African-American elected to the Internet Hall of Fame and Assistant Secretary of Commerce during the Clinton administration. great people fighting the fight with COSIN, my good friends, a consortium on school networking. Okay, COSIN.org. Okay, about equity and access, really just amazing people. And I'm honored to have them on the show. And thank you for listening. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. And I'll say it again, check out ace-ed.org. You'll love it. Join our consortium. Hey, everybody, have a good week. It's Monday, May 18th. Thanks for listening. And stay safe.